You're listening to Agriculture Today.
I think we might be getting to the point to where people are throwing in the towel and just saying, hey, I got to rebuild the herd at some point. Let's just start doing it now. So I think if we can continue to see the U.S. cattle producer rebuilding that herd over the long term, we'll see some feed demand come back.
Cody Gerlach is Director of Strategic Sales with Barchard.
For me personally, I'm focused on rebuilding the herd because I think that's where the opportunities are going to be over the next few years.
The fact that we haven't been rebuilding the herd means our cattle numbers are down, which means more pressure on packers. But a labor dispute at one of the nation's largest beef processing facilities now continues into another week. It raises concerns about potential impacts on production and the broader cattle market. Nearly 3,800 workers at a JBS-owned Swift Beef Plant in Greeley, Colorado, remain on strike as negotiations between the company and union representatives have stalled. Strike began March 16, centers on allegations of unfair labor practices, wage concerns, and workplace conditions. Of course, the situation comes at a time when the beef sector already navigating tight cattle supplies and strong demand, which makes any disruption to processing more significant for the supply chain. Well, U.S. soybean transportation costs declined late last year, but the improvement is not translating into stronger export performance. USDA data shows lower truck and barge rates did help reduce total transportation cost for U.S. soybeans during the fourth quarter. It's easing some pressure on export competitiveness. However, rising ocean freight rates offset part of those gains, limiting the overall impact on landed cost. At the same time, Brazil's seen sharply higher transportation costs, especially for trucking, yet continue to expand its dominance in global soybean trade. Brazil exported 12.8 million metric tons of soybeans to China during the fourth quarter, up significantly from the previous year. U.S. exports, however, dropped to just 1.44 million metric tons. Well, grain transportation shifting into spring mode as the Mississippi River system reopens, while rising diesel prices expected to push freight costs higher in the weeks ahead. Mid-Mississippi River reopened for navigation on the 19th, followed by the Upper Mississippi, reaching St. Paul on March 24th. It marked the final season opening point. Reopening now comes slightly later than last year, but it does restore a key export corridor after winter closures. Last year, more than 12.8 million metric tons of grain moved through a key lower Mississippi lock. It underscores the system's importance to U.S. exports. Transportation costs now becoming a growing concern. Diesel prices surging to over $5.37 per gallon, up sharply in recent weeks, which will begin flowing into railcar shipping cost through higher fuel surcharges starting in the month of May. And for long-distance routes, that could add roughly $575 per rail car to freight cost. Shippers already reacting. Rail demand expected to increase this month. It's Agriculture Today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
It has gone up and down quite a bit, and it's worth thinking about the different types of CRP enrollments that we now see as well.
Brad Lubin is an agricultural economist at the University of Nebraska at Lincoln.
Because the general enrollment that was first implemented with the program in 86, I believe, for the first enrollments, the general enrollment was a competitive process. Producers bid their land into the CRP, and lands were accepted based on some priority calculation and score for each parcel that was bid in. That general enrollment could be thought of as much a supply control or at least production reducing program as it was an environmental program. But it idled the most acres, as high as 37 million acres in time, but now shrinking dramatically. That general component is really less than a third of today's CRP program at about 8 million acres. The continuous CRP was implemented in the 1996 Farm Bill and in the following years. The continuous CRP tried to target enrollments more specifically to environmentally sensitive acres. Those acres like filter strips and buffer strips along streams. It didn't take a large whole field out of production. It took an isolated piece that had maybe outsized environmental benefits relative to the amount of land it retired. That continuous CRP helped protect streams and wellheads and maybe critical habitat. That CRP grew over the last 20 years, but it's really sort of leveled off recently at around 8 million acres total currently enrolled in the CRP. Now, the grassland CRP is the newest kid on the block. It dates back to the 2014 Farm Bill. But over the last decade, the grassland CRP has grown dramatically. And the grassland CRP really does differ from the other two components of CRP. It doesn't take land out of production specifically for a conservation and environmental benefit. It keeps land in production, in this case grassland, that is going to stay in production for typically for grazing. It keeps land in production, but it manages it jointly for both production and environmental benefits. So you might make some adjustments to stocking rates, or you might make some adjustments to the grazing season to help manage the nesting season for birds and so forth. So it's a little more environmentally targeted, or it's a little more managerially targeted, but it keeps land in production. It's more of a working lands than a land retirement program. Well, that portion of the CRP has now grown, and it's actually, as of the latest statistics, it's over 10 million acres. So it's more than a third of the CRP itself in the over the last decade. That kind of reflects the economics and the motivations of enrolling in the CRP.
Also talks about the importance of coalitions.
There are more provisions in the CRP than I've described, and some of those are related to more targeted conservation practices, maybe water quality or wetlands restoration or critical habitat, various provisions that add some particular, maybe some additional incentives to enrollments in the CRP. But the longer run direction of CRP has been, you know, dependent upon Farm Bill reauthorization and dependent upon this sort of balance of both farm economic support that comes from enrollments in the CRP as well as the conservation and environmental benefits that come from that enrollment. It's been that coalition that has continued to support the CRP over time, and that's the question of going forward.
It's Agriculture Today.
Introducing the heavyweight champion of the livestock operation, Case IH Farmall Utility Series Tractors.
Farmall Utility Tractors don't just outweigh the competition. They're engineered to distribute weight where it works, from the transmission, central housing, and axles to the differentials and final drives. So add some weight to your operation and go the distance with Farmall Utility Tractors.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
This has been Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
with Agriculture Today. Here's Tony St. James.
A large share of dairy operating debt is variable rate, financing feed purchases, inputs, payroll, and working capital.
Matt Erickson is a senior analyst with Terrain.
Expectations for 2026 point toward cautious easing, with the federal funds rate trending toward roughly 3%, down from 3.64% in February and the recent peak of 5.33% in 2023 to 2024. This provides welcome relief compared with recent highs, but it is not a return to the ultra-low rate environment of the 2010s. If rate cuts are made in 2026, they will likely be slow and measured, balancing the progress made on inflation and the health of the labor market. As a result, lower rates may slow the growth in interest expense, but total borrowing costs can still rise due to higher input costs. Management decisions often matter more than the rate itself. Lowering average borrowed balances, improving milk marketing discipline, and coordinating purchases and sales can reduce costs as much as modest rate cuts. Lenders will remain disciplined. Access to credit will depend on cash flow strength, working capital trends, margin protection strategies, and cost control, not just falling rates. Long-term rates are unlikely to fall meaningfully in 2026 if recession fears remain low. Markets increasingly view the economy's long-run neutral rate as higher than in the 2010s, reflecting stronger economic growth and sustained labor demand. Even if inflation continues to cool, 10-year expected inflation remains elevated near 2.3% to 2.4%. Investors demand compensation for uncertainty over the next decade. Persistent federal deficits also prop up long-term rates by increasing the supply of long-dated treasury securities, which requires higher yields to attract buyers. Until deficits move materially lower relative to GDP, this dynamic is likely to keep long-term rates elevated. For dairy producers, this means financing tied to land, barns, parlors, manure systems, and other long-lived assets is likely to remain sticky even if operating rates ease. The 2026 rate environment favors discipline over leverage. Liquidity and working capital remain the first line of defense against milk price and feed cost volatility. Conservative budgets and regular stress testing under lower milk prices or higher feed costs are essential. Producers should review their debt structure with lenders, as periods of modest easing can still create opportunities to refinance debt. Higher long-term rates raise the bar for debt-financed expansion. Consider the overall U.S. economy over the past 5 years. During COVID-19, borrowing near 3% to 4%, while inflation exceeded 9%, made expansion relatively easy, along with massive government stimulus. Today, with borrowing costs closer to 6% to 7%, and inflation near 3%, the economics are far less forgiving. To keep expectations realistic, consider the math. A 50 basis point drop in operating rates from 6.75% to 6.25% saves roughly $2,500 per $500,000 borrowed annually, or $10,000 on a $2 million operating line. Helpful, yes, but not a financing reset. Bottom line, modest easing in short-term rates can support cash flow, but long-term borrowing costs are likely to stay elevated. Profitability in 2026 will depend less on where rates settle and more on how efficiently capital is used and how well milk margins are protected and feed risk is managed.
It's Agriculture Today.
Let's talk about supply chains. Each year, Cotton Incorporated's global supply chain marketing team has hundreds of meetings with brands and retailers in all corners of the globe. They're working to find innovative ways to replace synthetic fabrics with natural, sustainable cotton to expand your customer base and drive more demand. You grow the cotton. The Cotton Research and Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts round here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at deltapine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
The final guideline set the 2026 renewable diesel blending requirement at 8.86 billion RINs, with 2027 mandated at 8.95 billion.
Arlen Suderman, chief economist with StoneX.
Now, that includes a 70% reallocation of previously granted small refinery exemptions. That was a big deal, but also largely factored in after a Bloomberg story had kind of leaked all this information and turned out to be fairly accurate in that leak on what the final guidelines actually are. Now, that translates into about 5.4 billion gallons of biomass diesel production for this year. Add in the reallocated small refinery exemptions, and it rises to about 5.53 billion gallons, up from 3.35 billion in 2025. For 2027, we get a base RVO requirement of 5.7 billion gallons, which rises to about 5.86 billion gallons when reallocated SREs are added back in. Imported feedstocks get a full RIN of credit through 2027. That is a change from what was initially proposed. That's not final. That's just the EPA stating that is what their intention is. And as I said, they have to immediately start working on those 2028 guidelines now that they have the 26 and 27 guidelines out. Add to that that we see that Argentina at the end of last week said that they are going to allow ethanol blends up to 15% to ease high fuel prices. That is currently at about 12%, while allowing biodiesel blends to go to 20%. That's currently at 7.5%. Indonesia also indicated over the weekend that they will proceed with their mandate to push biodiesel blending to 50% this year, up from 40% currently, utilizing its supplies of palm oil to do so. As we're looking at major shortages, particularly in Asia, but also in other parts of the world, of energy commodities right now because of the closure of the Strait of Hormuz, biofuels are growing in demand, just trying to have it. Now, this will probably increase the food for fuel debate. And do we use food-based commodities for fuel? That debate will probably increase. But it's going to depend on each region's shortage. Are you short of food or are you short on fuel, on which gets a priority? For the most part, it's currently a shortage of fuel. That's what's immediately. Now, the United Nations kind of aggravated this whole debate here in recent days by predicting that we could see global food shortages of a crisis level by as early as June of this year. Now, as I look at it, that's a little bit sensational. They're talking about the fertilizer shortages that are starting to play out in the world, and those are very real, and a shortage of nitrogen fertilizers, which are facing the biggest shortages, does have a direct impact on yields. But let's keep in mind, we also have surplus supplies of wheat and corn and basically most of our food-based commodities to help ease the current shortfall in this year. Regardless, those headlines are hitting on Wall Street. Fund managers are seeing them. And so that's going to increase the intrigue toward ownership and money flow toward the food-based commodities, something to be aware of. If you look at where this these high energy prices and shortfalls of energy are most directly impacting, it's Asian economies followed by European economies. And the U.S. right now is the least affected. Now, that people in the United States may find that hard to believe when they look at inflationary pressures here in the United States, high fuel prices, etc. But it's much worse in much of the rest of the world because of Iran's closure of the Strait of Hormuz.
It's Agriculture Today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
So there's going to be a lot from a global perspective.
Mike Castle is with StoneX.
The biggest focus here in the U.S. right now, just with the time of year it is, with planting season coming up. Next week on the 31st is USDA's annual prospective plantings report. So the question that's at the front of everyone's mind is this going to impact corn acres? And in my opinion, I think a lot of the headlines when folks are talking about fertilizer who maybe aren't as involved in these markets is been kind of a, oh man, we're going to have global food shortages. We're going to have, you know, a lack of supply availability in the U.S. Our issue is really going to be more a matter of affordability, not availability. The same can't be said for everywhere in the world. But for us, I don't think it leads to some massive rush out of corn acres. We had a solid fall anhydrous run. A lot of folks had stuff booked in advance, less than normal, I would say. You know, in some places, I hate to, you know, pick on the Northern Plains again, but again, they're more urea heavy. They've got a later season. I think you had less coverage up there. So you may lose some acres in kind of the more fringe areas. But I don't think this is, again, some millions of acres lost by any means. What I do think, however, in, again, this is just my own personal opinion, is that we'll see that March 31st number, that prospective planting number, be the biggest acreage print of the year. I don't think we're going to have a situation like 2025 where corn acres just kept getting bigger, right? From the March report to June to August to final, every time it was possible, corn acres got bigger and they ended up at an 89-year high. So I don't think you're going to have that risk this year. I do think you'll see things kind of get walked back, especially because of the fact that those surveys that will come out on the March 31 numbers, a lot of those responses came in prior to the war kicking off, prior to those retail prices moving this much higher. And the other thing, you know, outside of acres is I do think you could see some yield drag effects in some areas and specifically in the wheat market. Basically, if you are a winter wheat grower in an area that the crop comes out of dormancy not looking that great and you didn't have your spring N&P needs booked, that top dress all of a sudden does not look like a great decision. And maybe it's a situation where the farmers kind of want to, for lack of a better term, grow their way out of it, bushel their way out of it. The economics look, again, just terrible. So I do think that's a risk. And, you know, in the States, we don't see that as much. But again, zooming out to a bigger picture in the world, there are places with legitimate problems from this. There are regions that are extremely reliant, not just on the fertilizer that flows directly out of the strait, but in the downstream markets, in the natural gas markets. There's a lot of folks who rely, their entire domestic production is based on consistent LNG imports. And I think that's going to be the longer term issue, right? We've done long term energy infrastructure damage in the Middle East. And that's something I think you'll feel longer term. And the areas that are most exposed to this, again, Europe does this kind of act as the catalyst to get them to start buying from Russia again. That's the big question, because the supply options are very limited. If not, they're going to have a lot more issues sourcing their inputs. And Asia is one to certainly not lose sight of, South Asia specifically. India is kind of your biggest fertilizer buyer. Brazil is another prime example. Latin America more generally. 2022, again, when you saw those all-time high prices, you saw material drops in fertilizer imports in more developing countries. Specifically, a prime example of that was the Central American coffee market. You saw big drops in urea imports, and you saw yield impacts in the years after that. And obviously, there's weather, there's all kinds of stuff that goes into that. But there are certainly a lot of areas that will be at risk from this, and I don't think this is a story that goes away when the strait reopens. I think this is going to be a longer-term thing to kind of keep an eye on here.
It's Agriculture Today.
Introducing the heavyweight champion of the livestock operation, Case IH Farmall Utility Series Tractors.
Farmall Utility Tractors don't just outweigh the competition. They're engineered to distribute weight where it works, from the transmission, central housing, and axles to the differentials and final drives. So add some weight to your operation and go the distance with Farmall Utility Tractors.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
This has been Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
with Agriculture Today. Here's Tony St. James.
Fourth quarter 2026 and first quarter 2027 margins are notably attractive on a historical basis.
Matt Erickson is a senior analyst with Terrain on risk management for pork producers.
Given typical seasonal price weakness and expectations for expanding pork supplies during these quarters, these periods may warrant proactive risk management. Rather than fully covering at current levels, a layered approach to protection could be appropriate, allowing producers to secure attractive margins while retaining upside flexibility should the market extend higher. Terrain's quarter 2 2026 price forecasts for the lean hog index for April point forecast between $91 to $92 with a high confidence range between $84 to $99, May between $99 to $100 as a point forecast with a high confidence range between $93 to $106, and for June, a point forecast between $106 to $107 with a high confidence range between $97 to $113. Terrain's pork cutout forecast for quarter two. For April, point forecast between $100 and $101, with a high confidence range between $94 to $106. For May, the point forecast between $110 to $111, with a high confidence range between $102 to $119. And for June, a point forecast between $112 to $113 with a high confidence range between $106 to $118. Disease-related inefficiencies continue to lend structural support to hog prices and forward margins by increasing supply uncertainty and limiting downside price risk. In February, porcine reproductive and respiratory syndrome positivity registered at 27.8%. above the seasonal five-year average of 26.4%. Meanwhile, porcine epidemic diarrhea virus positivity in February reached 14.9% above the five-year seasonal average of 13.2% with strength concentrated in wing-to-market and adult sow operations. The pork cutout is positioned to hold strong value in quarter two and likely through much of the summer months as domestic demand remains strong and freezer stocks remain tight overall. USDA cold storage data as of February 28 still points to a pork complex that is tighter than normal in several key cuts such as bellies, loins, ribs, and butts, even if a few categories have slightly rebuilt versus last year's tight levels such as hams and picnics. That mix can keep the cutout supported and more reactive to short-term shifts in demand, especially as the market transitions from the post-Easter holiday toward the summer grilling season. USDA data show retail beef prices averaged 1.91 times retail pork prices recently, compared with closer to 1.6 over the past 5 years. With retail beef prices still well above historical norms, pork remains competitively positioned as a value alternative in the meat case as wage growth for consumers continues to converge with overall inflation. Producer-owned barrow and gilt weights are up 0.1% year-over-year, and up 1.6% relative to the five-year average. Packer sold weights are also elevated, up 2.6% year-over-year, and 1.9% above the five-year average, while packer-owned weights are up 1.1% year-over-year. While heavier weights add supply to the market and can create price pressure at the margin, strong domestic demand and solid export performance remain critical offsets.
It's Agriculture Today.
Let's talk about supply chains. Each year, Cotton Incorporated's global supply chain marketing team has hundreds of meetings with brands and retailers in all corners of the globe. They're working to find innovative ways to replace synthetic fabrics with natural, sustainable cotton to expand your customer base and drive more demand. You grow the cotton. The Cotton Research and Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.